flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I should probably stay off social media during the commercial break because now I'm jealous. I'm absolutely jealous watching my friend Anton Vincent and his wife Lindy and their daughter Chase at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Chaka Khan, George Michael, Willie Nelson, Rage Against the Machine, The Spinners, Missy Elliott, they were all inducted along with Don Cornelius. And they got all the pictures with all the celebrities and they got video. And I tell you, now I'm feeling some kind of way. I am very jelly right now. Very. I could just put some peanut butter and eat myself like a sandwich. I am so jelly. I'm just going to have to close the computer so I can get on with the show. Because now I have Facebook envy. I really do. I don't know. Do y'all do that? Do y'all ever have Facebook envy where you go on Facebook and you see your friends doing something really like super cool that you want to do, that you've been dreaming of doing, that you were like, oh, man, I wish I could go. And then you look up and they're like hanging out with Missy Elliott at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony, that they're like, you know, singing with Usher at one of those $1,500 seat Vegas concert tickets, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Okay, I'm closing the computer. I'm going to get back to my show because I want to stay focused. Because when I met Dana Neuhauser, I was like, you know what? She's going to be my new best friend. She's doing amazing work. She is right there on the front line making our community better, leveling the playing field, fighting for equality. You know, a lot of people will put up a social media post and say something is or isn't right. They'll be the first ones to say something on their company's website. But who's out there doing the work? Who's got their hands dirty? Who has a heart for justice? Dana does. And I am so excited to have her joining me now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. It's her first time on the Shaletta Show. Hey, girl. Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am so glad you are here. If nobody else has said thank you, let me say thank you. If nobody else says that they appreciate you, let me say that I appreciate you. Having a heart for justice, whether you are on the board of the Minnesota Council of Churches or an ordained deacon in the United Methodist Church, you have been on the front lines, particularly for racial justice, and you work to equip people as part of living as a woman of faith in mm-hmm. our community. How did you get started on this journey?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. So I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and saw like my whole life this the impact of racial injustice. And I felt called from a young age to work toward justice. It took me a while to figure out exactly what my lane was. As an Asian American woman, I was trying to figure out where I fit, but I found this place as a Christian leader in the church, calling folks to do the work and to to take responsibility for the work and not just leave it in the past and think it's done, but to look around and see how centuries of injustice has gotten us to the place that we're at. And we need to, as people of faith, step up and do some real truth telling and self-reflection and then dig in to make a big difference.
And you are making a big difference with March. And when I saw that, I was like, she's marching. Where is she marching? No, March stands for something. March is something. You're steering the team of March. Talk to me about March and that coalition.
Yeah, so March stands for Multi-Faith, Anti-Racism, Change, and Healing. And it's a coalition of interfaith leaders who've been working over the last many years toward justice from a faith-rooted perspective. And I think it was the coming out of the murder of Trayvon Martin, this like call to, we really need to do something in particular to show up for our Black siblings. And the coalition is multi-faith, as I said. It's also multiracial, but it is primarily made up of white communities, like the churches that are involved are predominantly white. So how do you equip and call forth white communities to stand up and to literally march? plenty of time to show up at protests, at vigils, at the state legislature, at city council meetings to say, this is not what we can be. We can be something different. We can live into a future that is more just and more liberative for all of us. And that our faith leaders are saying, we got to be part of that. We can't be on the sidelines. We got to be in the streets.
But, you know, that has traditionally been what faith leaders in this country do. You think back to Dr. Martin Luther King. He was
Absolutely.
Not just out there marching with Black people. He
right.
had his Jewish brothers and sisters, Hindu, Muslim, you know, atheist, agnostic. They were all marching together, Protestant and Catholics and Lutheran and Presbyterian and Southern Baptists, a couple of them, you know, just fighting for justice and, you know, shining a light on darkness and injustice. And so,
Absolutely.
You know, for whatever reason, and I'm not sure when it happened, girl, we got away from that. And I'm sure that safety played a role. If I had to be out there and they were killing, you know, frontline leaders, religious leaders, and folks were dying, I don't know that I would have been out there. So, you know, what's your best guess on why things changed and why you're having to bring back something that was traditionally a part of faith leadership, which is being on the front lines of injustice?
Yeah, I mean, I know that there have been threads of this justice work and confronting oppression all throughout. So it maybe wasn't making the headline news the way it was when Dr. King was in, in Birmingham and in Selma. But there have been people that I don't want to discount those folks who've been doing this work for decades and generations. But I do think that there's this kind of political, we've been kind of pacified politically over the last, you know, generation to say, oh, the civil rights movement took care of it, right? So we don't have to deal with racial injustice anymore because, you know, laws were passed and people can vote and segregation is illegal, et cetera. And so there's this kind of pacifying into not feeling like there's as much an urgency, right? But as in the last decade or so, we've seen, like, repeatedly, there is not just an urgency, but it's, like, it's never actually gone away. We're just in the age of social media seeing it more, being confronted by it more. And at the same time, the political machine is kind of rolling back some of those gains that came out of the middle 20th century work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a new energizing, a new calling forth of leaders across, you know, across faiths to step up and say, no more. Like, we have to like live this as part of our faith. Our faith calls us to that. Our faith equips us to be part of this, resisting oppression and injustice, and then building the world that we know is possible. Another world is possible, a world of justice and liberation for all. And that's hopefully something that more and more people start to see as part of their faith lives, and more leaders and, you know, lay people start to get involved in, because that's how we're actually going to effect change.
And folks who listen to this show expect to be a part of change. And so I want you to tell me how we can get involved. I've got pastors, lay leaders, ministers, deacons, trustees, ushers, choir members, music ministry folks, Billy Steele at my church. They are listening right now and they're thinking, how do I get involved in March? This is my first time hearing about it. How can people become a part of this movement?
Yeah, well, I think one exciting thing that I'm involved in right now as part of my work with March is actually called Sacred Reckonings. And Sacred Reckonings is kind of a congregational organizing tool that helps congregations, particularly historically white and predominantly white congregations, to work toward reparations. So I know reparations is kind of, it can spark lots of conversation and debate. But when we are talking about reparations, like, the core of that is repair. And we've seen how so much harm has been done over the last several hundred years. And so part of what we want to do is equip these predominantly white churches to engage and work in reparations that includes deep truth telling. We can't repair what we don't acknowledge. Spiritual practice, like, this is something that both holds us up and nurtures us toward repair, but also we can't separate our spiritual life from the damage that has been done in the name of Christ over the last few centuries, right? So truth-telling, spiritual practice, relationship. So understanding that part of this false narrative, this mythology around race, is that the race may be a mythology, but racism is very real and very problematic and very harmful. And so building relationship across difference, across race, is a key part of it. And understanding our interdependence and mutuality. So, and then political solidarity is another key component of our framework. So how do we show up on the streets, at the protests, at, you know, City Hall? How do we prepare ourselves, particularly folks who are not Black or Indigenous, so white folks, other people of color, how do we prepare ourselves spiritually and physically and mentally to show up in a way that we're asked to by frontline communities, Black and Indigenous folks, in a way that shows that we're actually there in true solidarity, not just like, we're here to help, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about wealth return. So a lot of times we want to jump to wealth return. You're talking about money, you're talking about land, and it's certainly a key part of what we're talking about when we talk about reparations, but we kind of imagine it as all five of those circles. So truth telling, relationship, spiritual practice, political solidarity, and wealth return. At the center of a Venn diagram of all five circles is what reparations is. That's the repair mm-hmm. that we're after. And it's a lifelong process,
yeah.
right? This isn't like a 6-week Bible study and we're done. Like, this is deep ongoing work that has to happen. And we're focusing, on particularly predominantly and historically white congregations and equipping those folks, because there is this history of racism, of genocide, of chattel slavery, of land theft, has been a Christian problem. Like, settler colonizers came in with a cross at the front, And you and I know that that's not really right. what Jesus was about, mm-hmm. right? So we're trying to, like, face the truth of the past and fix it in ways that are, like, actually ongoing transformation, not just one time, you know, writing a check and being done with it. So that's the work of Sacred Reckonings that I'm super excited about. And we have trainings coming up, and people can check out the guidebook is free. It's available to download online. And then folks who are interested in March can check out our website, which, yep, I'm trying to pull it up so I know the site. Well, let's just say the Sacred Reckonings website is sacredreckonings.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm just drawing a blank on the March website. But
I'll look it up. You keep talking.
Okay, great. So we're doing kind of this specific work around reparations, trying to really engage people in something deeper than just talking about race and racial difference. I think mm-hmm. a lot of congregations got really activated and really excited to be involved in anti-racism work, especially in light of the murder of George Floyd. There was a lot of energy then, and that's important work, and that should be ongoing as well. But we're trying to invite folks into this reckoning work that's ongoing. And how do we do that and do it well so that we can build something new and healed for our future together?
Well, I'm sending folks over to marchminnesota.org. That is where they can go to get more information. I just appreciate you, Dana, for being on the show,
you.
For meeting me for coffee, for talking this thing out. And that is how we learn, we grow, we connect, we communicate and help our community together. Because you're not going to solve the problem. I can't solve the problem. But together we can
That's
make
right.
a dent and make a difference. Thank y'all for listening to Dana and I Chat It Up. And we will be right back.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I should probably stay off social media during the commercial break because now I'm jealous. I'm absolutely jealous watching my friend Anton Vincent and his wife Lindy and their daughter Chase at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Shaka Khan, George Michael, Willie Nelson, Rage Against the Machine, The Spinners, Missy Elliott, they were all inducted along with Don Cornelius. And they got all the pictures with all the celebrities and they got video. And I tell you, now I'm feeling some kind of way. I am very jelly right now. Very. I could just put some peanut butter and eat myself like a sandwich. I'm so jelly. I'm just going to have to close the computer so I can get on with the show. Because now I have Facebook envy. I really do. I don't know. Do y'all do that? Do y'all ever have Facebook envy where you go on Facebook and you see your friends doing something really like super cool that you want to do, that you've been dreaming of doing, that you're like, oh, man, I wish I could go. And then you look up and they're like hanging out with Missy Elliott at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony, that they're like, you know, singing with Usher at one of those $1,500 seat Vegas concert tickets, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Okay, I'm closing the computer. I'm going to get back to my show because I want to stay focused. Because when I met Dana Neuhauser, I was like, you know what? She's going to be my new best friend. She's doing amazing work. She is right there on the front line, making our community better, leveling the playing field, fighting for equality. You know, a lot of people will put up a social media post and say something is or isn't right. They'll be the first ones to say something on their company's website. But who's out there doing the work? Who's got their hands dirty? Who has a heart for justice? Dana does. And I am so excited to have her joining me now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. It's her first time on the Shaletta Show. Hey, girl. Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am so glad you are here. If nobody else has said thank you, let me say thank you. If nobody else says that they appreciate you, let me say that I appreciate you. Having a heart for justice, whether you are on the board of the Minnesota Council of Churches or an ordained deacon in the United Methodist Church, you have been on the front lines, particularly for racial justice, and you work to equip people as part of living as a woman of faith in mm-hmm. our community. How did you get started on this journey?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. So I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and saw, like, my whole life this the impact of racial injustice. And I felt called from a young age to work toward justice. It took me a while to figure out exactly what my lane was. As an Asian American woman, I was trying to figure out where I fit. But I found this place as a Christian leader in the church, calling folks to do the work and to take responsibility for the work and not just leave it in the past and think it's done, but to look around and see how centuries of injustice has gotten us to the place that we're at. And we need to, as people of faith, step up and do some real truth-telling and self-reflection and then dig in to make a big difference.
And you are making a big difference with March. And when I saw that, I was like, she's marching. Where is she marching? No, March stands for something. March is something. You're steering the team of March. Talk to me about March and that coalition.
Yeah, so March stands for Multi-Faith, Anti-Racism, Change, and Healing. And it's a coalition of interfaith leaders who've been working over the last many years toward justice from a faith-rooted perspective. And I think it was the coming out of the murder of Trayvon Martin, this like call to, we really need to do something in particular to show up for our Black siblings. And the coalition is multi-faith, as I said. It's also multiracial, but it is primarily made up of white communities, like the churches that are involved are predominantly white. So how do you equip and call forth white communities to stand up and to literally march? plenty of time to show up at protests, at vigils, at the state legislature, at city council meetings to say, this is not what we can be. We can be something different. We can live into a future that is more just and more liberative for all of us. And that our faith leaders are saying, we got to be part of that. We can't be on the sidelines. We got to be in the streets.
But, you know, that has traditionally been what faith leaders in this country do. You think back to Dr. Martin Luther King. He was
Absolutely.
Not just out there marching with Black people. He
right.
had his Jewish brothers and sisters, Hindu, Muslim, atheist, agnostic. They were all marching together, Protestant and Catholics and Lutheran and Presbyterian and Southern Baptists, a couple of them, just fighting for justice and shining a light on darkness and injustice. And so,
Absolutely.
You know, for whatever reason, and I'm not sure when it happened, girl, we got away from that. And I'm sure that safety played a role. If I had to be out there and they were killing you know, frontline leaders, religious leaders, and folks were dying. I don't know that I would have been out there. So you know, what's your best guess on why things changed and why you're having to bring back something that was traditionally a part of faith leadership, which is being on the front lines of injustice?
Yeah, I mean, I know that there have been threads of this justice work and confronting oppression all throughout. So it maybe wasn't making the headline news the way it was when Dr. King was in, you know, in Birmingham and in Selma. And but so there have been people that I don't want to discount those folks who've been doing this work for decades and generations. But I do think that there's this kind of political we've been kind of pacified politically over the last, you know, generation to say, oh, the civil rights movement took care of it, right? So we don't have to deal with racial injustice anymore because, you know, laws were passed and people can vote and segregation is illegal, et cetera. And so there's this kind of pacifying into not feeling like there's as much an urgency, right? But as in the last decade or so, we've seen, like, repeatedly, there is not just an urgency, but it's like it's never actually gone away. We're just in the age of social media seeing it more, being confronted by it more. And at the same time, the political machine is kind of rolling back some of those gains that came out of the middle 20th century work, right? Mm-hmm. So there has been a new energizing, a new calling forth of leaders across, you know, across faiths to step up and say, no more. Like we have to like live this as part of our faith. Our faith calls us to that. Our faith equips us to be part of this, resisting oppression and injustice, and then building the world that we know is possible. Another world is possible, a world of justice and liberation for all. And that's hopefully something that more and more people start to see as part of their faith lives, and more leaders and, you know, lay people start to get involved in, because that's how we're actually going to effect change.
And folks who listen to this show expect to be a part of change. And so I want you to tell me how we can get involved. I've got pastors, lay leaders, ministers, deacons, trustees, ushers, choir members, music ministry folks, Billy Steele at my church. They are listening right now and they're thinking, how do I get involved in March? This is my first time hearing about it. How can people become a part of this movement?
Yeah, well, I think one exciting thing that I'm involved in right now as part of my work with March is actually called Sacred Reckonings. And Sacred Reckonings is kind of a congregational organizing tool that helps congregations, particularly historically white and predominantly white congregations, to work toward reparations. So I know reparations is kind of it can spark lots of conversation and debate. But when we are talking about reparations, like the core of that is repair. And we've seen how so much harm has been done over the last several hundred years. And so part of what we want to do is equip these predominantly white churches to engage in work in reparations that includes deep truth telling. We can't repair what we don't acknowledge. Spiritual practice, like this is something that both holds us up and nurtures us toward repair, but also we can't separate our spiritual life from the damage that has been done in the name of Christ over the last few centuries, right? So truth telling, spiritual practice, relationship. So understanding that part of this false narrative, this mythology around race, is that the race may be a mythology, but racism is very real and very problematic and very harmful. And so building relationship across difference, across race, is a key part of it, and understanding our interdependence and mutuality. So, and then political solidarity is another key component of our framework. So how do we show up on the streets, at the protests, at, you know, City Hall? How do we prepare ourselves, particularly folks who are not Black or Indigenous, so white folks, other people of color, how do we prepare ourselves spiritually and physically and mentally to show up in a way that we're asked to by frontline communities, Black and Indigenous folks, in a way that shows that we're actually there in true solidarity, not just like we're here to help, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about wealth return. So a lot of times we want to jump to wealth return. You're talking about money, you're talking about land, and it's certainly a key part of what we're talking about when we talk about reparations, but it's, we kind of imagine it as all five of those circles. So truth telling, relationship, spiritual practice, political solidarity, and wealth return at the center of a Venn diagram of all five circles is what reparations is. That's the repair mm-hmm. that we're after. And it's a lifelong process,
yeah.
right? This isn't like a 6-week Bible study and we're done. Like, this is deep ongoing work that has to happen. And we're focusing, on particularly, predominantly and historically white congregations and equipping those folks, because there is this history of racism, of genocide, of chattel slavery, of land theft has been a Christian problem. Like, settler colonizers came in with a cross at the front. And you and I know that that's not really
right.
what Jesus was about,
mm-hmm.
right? So we're trying to like face the truth of the past and fix it in ways that are like actually ongoing transformation, not just one time, you know, writing a check and being done with it. So that's the work of Sacred Reckonings that I'm super excited about. And we have trainings coming up, and people can check out the guidebook is free. It's available to download online. And then folks who are interested in March can check out our website, which, I'm trying to pull it up so I know the site. Well, let's just say the Sacred Reckonings website is sacredreckonings.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just drawing a blank on the March website. But
I'll look it up. You keep talking.
Okay, great. So we're doing kind of this specific work around reparations, trying to really engage people in something deeper than just talking about race and racial difference. I think mm-hmm. a lot of congregations got really activated and really excited to be involved in anti-racism work, especially in light of the murder of George Floyd. There was a lot of energy then, and that's important work, and that should be ongoing as well. But we're trying to invite folks into this reckoning work that's ongoing. And how do we do that and do it well so that we can build something new and healed for our future together?
Well, I'm sending folks over to marchminnesota.org. That is where they can go to get more information. I just appreciate you, Dana, for being on the show,
you.
For meeting me for coffee, for talking this thing out. And that is how we learn, we grow, we connect, we communicate and help our community together. Because you're not going to solve the problem. I can't solve the problem. But together we can
That's
make
right.
a dent and make a difference. Thank y'all for listening to Dana and I Chatted Up. And we will be right back.